transmitter network planning section of the SABC, which is now Centec, where I was responsible for the planning and expansion of transmitter networks for what is now Centec. In 1994, I resigned from the SABC and moved to the newly established Independent Broadcasting Authority as the head of the technical division, where I was responsible for all the technical planning for broadcasting and also involved in the development of the first National Broadcasting Frequency Plan around 1996. There was restructuring that took place at the IBA in 1998. I then left the IBA and I established my own independent consultancy on spectrum management and regulatory affairs. I undertook a number of missions on behalf of the International Telecommunication Union in Africa. I did work in Tanzania, Mauritius, in Ethiopia, in Liberia, where I developed frequency plans for those countries, and also did a lot of work on spectrum pricing for the ITU. I also did work for the National Association of Broadcasters in South Africa. I also consulted to Orbicom, which at that stage was the signal distribution arm of MultiChoice. In 2008, a position became available at what was then the Department of Communications. Department of Communications, where I was Chief Director of Radio and Satellite Communications, a position that I now hold within the Department of Telecoms and Postal Service. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, no, that's fine. At some stage, I'll ask my second question. I'll hand over to another Salak, and then we'll cool down.
Thank you, Chair. Afternoon, Mr. Benza. I can see you are quite experienced in the field. I won't bother to get to ask on that. I will ask you, it's not controversial questions. It's questions on the current situation. what is your attitude or your opinion about the complaint which was lost about SABC by ICASA, to ICASA to investigate and give judgment. What is your opinion on that? Or if you have been following it, part of that question will be, do you think ICASA fulfilled its role in dealing with that complaint? That's one. Two is a thorny question of independence of ICASA. How far would you think the independence of ICASA vis-a-vis the ministry? Do you think as the arrangement now, is it conducive for a regulator which is in essence appointed by us in Parliament to be accountable to the ministry which that ministry itself have elements of its structure which actually have to be regulated also by ICASA. What will be your opinion in that, especially surrounding the independence of ICASA?
Thank you, Honourable Kalako Chair. When you speak of the complaint to ICASA regarding the SABC, I take it that this is the complaint about not showing violence. I think my belief is that this could have been handled better. I believe that all citizens have the right to receive knowledge, to receive information, and that there are unpalatable things that happen in South Africa or in the world. But citizens have the right to know about this, and it helps them to make informed decisions and to be informed and to create debate. My understanding or my belief is that this could have been handled better by ICASA. I don't think that it's really been resolved. It's been put to the back burner, and we don't see the outcome where SABC was said, yes, you need to show something, but has anything really come of it? I think this needs to be, it could have been handled better. And perhaps, if you will allow me, I'd just like to say, and this is probably, in my opinion, one of the issues with ICASA. They are not decisive enough. They are not strong enough, and they don't enforce the mandate that they have or the powers that they have to get things done. The issue of the independence of ICASA is a very difficult one, and this has been a debate since 1996. When the issue of IBA and SATRA were to be merged, what is independence? What does it mean? Independence from what? Independence from who? I mean, we all understand Section 192 of the Constitution, which says there shall be an independent broadcast regulator. And that is clear cut. But now the question is, does that extend to ICASA in other fields? There must be an independent broadcast regulator. If one looks at the days of the IBA and SATRA, if you will allow me, the IBA was independent. It was the broadcast regulator. It was dealing with content issues. SATRA at the time was not independent. SATRA used to make policy recommendations to the Minister of Communications. The Minister of Communications would, in fact, gazette those. So the minister was responsible. If one looks at the ICASA Act, the ICASA Act says that ICASA may make recommendations to the minister on policy. Now, if you are, but at the same time, the ICASA Act also says that ICASA is independent, subject only to the Constitution and the law. And I think one could have a debate as to exactly what this means. If the Electronic Communications Act, the ECA, states that ICASA must consider policies and policy directions made by the minister, but is not bound to implement them. So we have a difficult situation. At the same time, I do not believe that any regulator can be totally independent from government. Government pronounces on certain policies, certain of those need to be implemented. But I think where the independence comes in is that ICASA should not blindly follow policy. It needs to apply its mind. It needs to be shown that it is that it has applied its mind to policy and taken a decision which is in the best interests of the country. Similarly, with regard to being accountable to the minister appoints the councillors on the recommendation of Parliament. ICASA must also present its annual report to the minister. So the minister is a mechanism. perhaps rather than a direct report to which ICASA is accountable. So the issue of independence is a difficult one, and I think one needs to tread that line as to how does the regulator maintain its independence, do what is best in the interests of the public, and as you are all well aware, the legislation states that it must function independent from government influence and also from commercial influence. So it's a very difficult act that the regulator needs to follow in this regard. Thank you.
Okay, another question.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. If I may, really on issues of accountability, we'll ask Mr. President to talk more now, especially when it comes to issues of financing, because finances are coming from the legislature, that is the National Assembly. If he can give me more on the issues of accountability when it comes to that. He has explained very well, but I want to know, vis-a-vis the fact that they get their share from Parliament, so what will be his take?
Thank you very much. Chair, again, this is one of the difficult ones. As you correctly say, ICASA is funded through Parliament, through a grant, which is submitted by the Ministry of Communications. So, strictly speaking, and I'm not saying that this does happen, but the Ministry could control ICASA through the budget that is allocated. What I would like to see is that ICASA should be funded through licensees, but that it would still need to present a budget based on its needs, so that it wouldn't retain all the licensees that it collects. But that would require amendments to other legislation to enable that to happen. And when the existing Electronic Communications Act, when it was still a convergence bill, there was a proposal that was in that bill that ICASA should be funded through a portion of the licensees. But it does become difficult because this issue of independence, whoever controls the purse strings can to some extent control your function. So that is difficult. And as I say, I believe that ICASA should submit a budget to Parliament and that ICASA should be funded from a portion of its license fees. It collects a substantial amount in license fees, more than what it probably requires for its operations. So if Parliament could approve that budget to say that you collect $1 billion, for argument's sake, in license fees per annum. The budget that you have submitted indicates that you require $500 million, and it would then be debated, and this could happen, rather than the ministry controlling that, which indirectly could lead to control of ICASA.
Thanks, Chair. The second one would be, what advantages and disadvantages does mobile broadband bring about? In your answer, we would like to compare and contrast mobile versus fixed broadband rollout and qualify your choice and advise why the rest of the country should vote into your choice.
Mobile broadband has the advantage of one being able to access broadband services anywhere at any time, on your smartphone, on your tablet, on your laptop, be that. But one needs to bear in mind that the services that can be accessed on your smartphone, on your tablet, are not true broadband services. They are quasi-broadband services in that your throughput delivery of data is limited. To get true broadband services, you need a fiber connection. To get 100 megabits per second, 1 gigabit per second, you need a fiber connection. But that then gives you a fixed service. You can't move it around. It will be at your home, at your office. The majority of South Africans access broadband through mobile devices. And we need mobile. All of us, I think, in this room, all citizens, you want to be able to check your emails, to get news reports wherever you are. And that can only be done through mobile broadband. The problem is that spectrum is limited. You need, and you're sharing your spectrum. If there was one of us in this room accessing a mobile broadband service, we would get very good throughput on the device. If there are 10 of us trying to access something at the same time, you are going to get a much lower speed because you are all competing for that one or for that spectrum to download. It also depends on the distance you are from the base station and the topography of the area in which you are operating. So mobile broadband is being used by the majority of South Africans because there isn't fixed infrastructure available. Fixed infrastructure is expensive, the price is coming down. Members will know that until very recently, fixed broadband was really available through Telkom ADSL. Currently, there are a number of private companies that are rolling out fiber to the home, and prices are coming down. But it is still outside of the economic reach of the majority of South Africans. It is expensive. So one needs a combination. You want mobile broadband when you're on the move, but ideally, if you're looking to download movies or anything like that, you'd need fixed broadband via fiber.
Thank you very much. After this round, we'll go down to 249. just looking at the other paper, what does it say? So that we can go to the House when we need to vote. Another question?
Mr. Pett, the mine is on the Broadcasting Act, number 4, 1999. I want you to share with us your understanding of the Act. And in the course of you doing that, if you can as well tell us which Act did it repeal, the weaknesses of the previous one, and the weaknesses of this act that we're talking about, the Broadcasting Act. And I'm raising these things in the light of the new Companies Act, which has just been enacted.
Thank you. The Broadcasting Act, number 4 of 1999, replaced an act of Broadcasting Act, which I speak under correction, I can't remember, it was around 1976, it was an old act, where the only broadcaster in South Africa was the SABC. The Broadcasting Act of 1999 sought to create a new regulatory framework for broadcasting under a democratic dispensation. But much of the 1999 Act was focused on the SABC, and it could almost be seen as an SABC charter. The, to me, the major difficulty with the 1999 Act is there have been a lot of developments in broadcast technology subsequent to that. I mean, the 1999 Act gives the minister the power to make broadcasting policy, which is good. But the 1999 Act is essentially an analog broadcasting, or it was created in an analog broadcasting environment. Multi-channel broadcasting was in its infancy, digital broadcasting was in its infancy, and those issues aren't addressed. But as, to me, the major weakness of the 1999 Act is there is undue emphasis on the SABC, which is not a bad thing, but one probably needs a Public Broadcasting Act or some sort of legislation separate from other broadcasting activities, commercial, community broadcasting. And currently, converged issues, I mean, think over-the-top services, OTT, didn't exist in 1999. Multiple content streams were in the infancy. So the legislation as it stands at the moment doesn't cater for those.
My last question, Mr. Pet. The functions and the responsibilities of ICASA to the telecommunications and postal services as per the Postal Services Act and the Electronic Communications Act. You can just share with the panel the functions and the responsibility of ICASA.
ICASA has the mandate to license and regulate. Well, even broadcast, that's broadcasting, telecommunications, and postal services. So it's licensing, it's regulation, and it's monitoring and enforcement of the three sectors. And all of these need to be done in the public interest.
Yes, I want to ask a question in relation to the criticism that is given to ICASA that it lacks capacity and is often susceptible to the industry. I want to hear your view on this criticism in relation to two things. One, it is said, for instance, it lacks capacity in relation to the monopoly dominance of multi-choice. We know the problems of license in the pay TV space. What is your view in relation to that? And then secondly, the other aspect is, hypothetically, shouldn't ICASA withdraw the license to ANN7, taking into consideration that ANN7 it is said to have violated all journalistic standards.
Thank you, Honorable Ndlozi. It is true ICASA does lack capacity. And if you will permit me, Chair, I think one of the problems with ICASA is that it doesn't have the capacity to adequately compensate its employees. Again, if you will allow me to go back, in the days of the Independent Broadcasting Authority, there was a provision in the IBA Act which says that staff had to be paid market-related salaries. That is no longer the case with ICASA. The good staff at ICASA are very quickly taken up by industry. And that becomes a problem. Companies such as Telkom, for example, have a regulatory division which is probably larger than what the whole of ICASA staff is. So ICASA are fighting a losing battle against many of the big companies. And yeah, I would include the mobile companies as well. So ICASA doesn't have the capacity. It's fighting a losing battle to do this. The multi-choice monopoly is problematic. There have been subscription broadcasters that have been licensed by ICASA. None of them has lasted very long. Because multi-choice can afford to outbid them on rights. And I mean, I think all South Africa, or the majority of South Africans, are sports crazy. And whoever has the English Premiership rights or the national football rights, these are the people that are going to attract eyeballs. OTT services will be a challenge to multi-choice. But unfortunately, OTT services don't carry sport. And this, if I may, is, I believe, an area where ICASA is falling short, that it is not taking effective steps to control multi-choice's dominance. Regarding your question on ANN and the withdrawal of the license, I don't think that should happen. One may not agree with what ANN has done. ANN has a license. If they are in violation of their license conditions, they need to be brought to account for the violation of their license conditions. But I don't think that one should summarily or very easily withdraw a license because one doesn't agree with content, for example, that is being broadcast. ICASA does have the mechanisms to bring licensees to book. Again, the Complaints and Compliance Committee is not as effective as it could be. The reasons for that are debatable, but ICASA certainly has great capacity challenges, and it doesn't enforce the powers that it does have to bring licensees to book.
Thank you. Members, the second question will be asked in 249.
Why are you rushing? we're busy with the candidate,
We'll have to go back to the house.
Can we do this interview on everyone's behalf? And Fandam will do this.
We're doing it. What we'll do now, we'll go down to E249, and then we'll continue the interview. Only one question from Honorable Joseph, and then two questions from Honorable Fandam. And then we're done, so that you are released after that. They will show you where 249 is.
Yeah. one side of it. Of the pope. Someone asked me, it's sweet.
I'm used to this, man. I feel no color on it. That's why I'm getting older, but I'm not young anymore. Now, if you see me take this off the echo.
That's your boy's dream child of life.
He's throwing us under the bus.
What
happened last morning?
These questions. I don't know if you saw my last email.
Yes, we were copying.
It was a tough one. I accepted all the
transfers. After Menko.
Fix all the errors. I sent it with the page number and then he prints this wrong one.
And so I confront him. I ask him, I say, hey, but why you printed the wrong one? Because we sent you the right one. He comes back to the computer to me. I'm wrong. And then I open and say, look, this one, the question, this one. He doesn't even say sorry. He doesn't know. Then he moves
away. Because I ask him, but give me the latest question so I can print it. Because he's covered for a print lesson. There is a public interview. The email that's coming from us print it. That's why I have 60 copies here.
This is the wrong one you gave me.
Next time, at least, Mr. Boss, probably after what you said.
Because this is what happens.
Then we end up with this. When you head out there, you find that.
No, what's the deal?
No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that.
last question.
Thank you.
economics of the people will just cry for the sake of crying.
All right. She tried to answer with this person has, yes, it's more technical.
Honorable members, let's resume. Honorable Kalago is coming. I think we'll have to skip the second question of Honorable Ndlozi. He will ask when he comes back. Can you go to another member, Honorable Fandam?
Thanks, Mr. Pitta. I'm sure you're aware of Section 6 of the ICASA Act, which states that anyone who is in the employ of the state or a public servant cannot serve on the ICASA Council. You are currently employed at the Department of Telecommunications, am I correct?
That is correct, yes.
Yes. You realize that you can't serve on the ICASA board and do that. You'd have to pick one. If we decide as a committee that we would like you on the council, will you resign from the department?
Yes, I would resign. Chair, I need to give 1 month's notice at the department. So should I be appointed as a councillor, I would then resign from the Department of Telecoms and Postal Services.
Thanks, Mr. Petter. I noticed that you have a lot of technical qualifications, which is good, which is what is required on the board. But I'd like to hear your views on the Data Must Fall campaign, which has been in the public for the last couple of weeks. What are your views on that, and how do you think ICASA should respond?
Thank you, Honourable Van Dam. Again, I think, as with all of these issues, there's no simple answer. Yes, data is expensive. However, at the same time, one needs to bear in mind that often comparisons are made with countries where data is a lot cheaper, but where the networks aren't as reliable as they are in the case of South Africa. So one needs to strike the balance, and data is excessive. And if I may be quite blunt, I think that the profits that are made by some of the mobile operators are obscene. The profits are really excessive. So there is room to bring down data. ICASA is focused on reducing mobile termination rates, but that's a very small part of the picture. And one needs to do an extensive inquiry into the whole issue of cost to communicate. I mean, I've been now in government since 2008, and there was talk about cost to communicate when I joined government. There's still talk about cost to communicate. And apart from mobile termination rates, which we initiated around 2010, nothing much has been done. So costs need to come down, but costs must not come down to the detriment of quality of service. So you've got to maintain that balance. Thank you.
Honorable Ndlozi, your last question.
No, I couldn't defend this room. I'm sorry for coming in. My question was the second one, which had to do with the regulation of digital media. I just wanted to find out if you know which aspects of digital media are regulated and why, but also which aspects are not that you think should be regulated, and why do you think those aspects that are not regulated should be regulated. But finally, which ones are regulated that you think should not be regulated and why? Does it make sense? Excellent.
It does. Thank you, Honorable Ndlozi. I think one needs to look at the history of regulation. And regulation started in the 1940s, probably, where, and I'm going to focus now particularly on content regulation. Broadcasting was either done via shortwave or medium wave, which had a very large reach. I mean, shortwave broadcasting, you can broadcast right around the world. Medium wave broadcasting, if one looks at continental Europe, you broadcast across countries. It was high power broadcasting, there was a need to regulate. And that tradition has sort of moved on through regulation when it came to FM sound broadcasting, to television broadcasting. But one needs to look at whether that regulatory regime is still appropriate. Even on the technical side, there was this whole issue of command and control. Governments must be in control of regulation. Let us look at the internet. The internet is unregulated. The internet is digital media. The internet is successful. We all access the internet. Once you start regulating that, you're going to stifle innovation. You're going to restrict content. That does not mean to say there must be no regulation. Issues of hate speech, issues of child pornography, things like that need regulation. But I believe one needs to set out a broad framework. What is desirable, or classify what is non-desirable, and you regulate non-desirable content. You must actually have a light touch regulation rather than trying to control everything, because a lot of digital media you are not going to be able to control. So it's no good setting up this elaborate regulatory regime to control something you can't control. OTT is a case in point. People are looking to regulate Skype, to regulate WhatsApp, to regulate other OTT services. Not going to work out in practice. Some years ago, if I may give you an example, there was the issue of voice over IP in the days of the telecom monopoly and other voice monopolies. And people tried their best to prohibit the use of voice over IP. They failed. We now have Skype, you have WhatsApp voice calls, Cell C are now advertising Wi-Fi calling, etc. There are issues that you just can't regulate them, and don't try and regulate them, because you're going to expend a lot of resources and effort into trying to control something that you can't. So set the broad parameters, set the framework, declare certain content undesirable, regulate that and prosecute that, because that is reasonably easy, but don't try and regulate all digital media. It can't be done. Thank you.
Yeah. That was the last question for now from Honorable Ndlozi. Can I, because we are going back to the follow-ups if they are, but my question will be, which is the last one? There is what you call, oh, the other thing, you have used a lot of abbreviations. Sometimes you don't know what it means. And one will get lost if you don't understand what the abbreviation means. There is National Consumer Council. There is Competition Commission. There is Regulators Complaints Compliance Commission. There are those three. And maybe it will be important to just to outline its differences in terms of functions. And maybe once you outline such differences, you tell us, as the second part of the question, tell us what in what ways, if there are differences, in what ways do these bodies complement each other in regulating the ICT sector. First, you outline what are their differences, and secondly, how do they complement each other regarding the ICT sector.
Thank you, Chair, and my apologies for the use of abbreviations. It is a very bad habit that I have, and I know I'm regularly pointed out in that, and I apologize, and I'm quite happy to clarify any points that I did, any abbreviations that I did use that may not have been clear. I apologize here. As you say, there are these three bodies that to a large extent overlap. The Consumer Commission deals more with consumer issues. If we can bring it to a practical level within the ICT sector, people who may have complaints about faulty equipment or issues around contracts and so on. The Complaints and Compliance Committee established by ICASA would look at complaints that are referred, first of all, by members of the public to ICASA on issues affecting licensees or issues of non-compliance with the various pieces of legislation that ICASA is mandated to manage, such as the Electronic Communications Act, the ICASA Act, etc. ICASA would then refer such complaints as it affects licensees or the acts for which ICASA is responsible to the Complaints and Compliance Committee, which would then investigate the complaint and make recommendations back to ICASA. So ICASA really retains the responsibility. The Competition Commission would deal with issues relating to competition within the electronic communication sector, so dominance of or lack of competition within the sector, dominance of certain players and so on. There are memoranda of understanding between ICASA and the Consumer Council, Consumer Tribunal and the Competition Commission. So they have a cooperative framework within which they do operate. But the Competition Commission, for example, or the Complaints and Compliance Committee of ICASA and ICASA are to a large extent bound by the Electronic Communications Act, the ICASA Act, and the regulations. So issues affecting consumers that may fall outside of that would then more than likely be the ambit of one of the other bodies. However, at the same time, and I know this has happened between the Competition Commission and ICASA, that there has been, or there in the past, there has been a degree of forum shopping. If I don't like what the one body says, I will go to the other body. But I believe that in recent times that has reduced to some extent because of these memoranda of understanding that exist between the bodies.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Betts. Any other follow-up, Honorable Ndlozi?
I have a slight follow-up. I think it has to do with the clarity around what you actually conceive as independence. So if, in your view, something like ANN7, which is owned by the Gupta family, explicitly in the ways in which it runs its news violates journalistic standards. Not only that, I mean, there's been problems even of journalists within Inside who have reported to have been treated unfairly on many levels. I'm giving that as an example of the required type of independence in journalism. I want to hear clearly what your point is. And I bring a complaint to ICASA. Are you saying that it can't be withdrawn, the license? Just for clarity, because earlier on you seemed to dilly-dally.
Thank you, Honorable Ndlozi. I'm sorry if I created the wrong impression. No, a license can be withdrawn. If each licensee has license conditions which specify what it can and can't do, and if there is repeated violation of those license conditions, this is typically a case that would be referred to the Complaints and Compliance Committee of ICASA. There would be an investigation, there would be a hearing, and there would be a recommendation made on that, and there could even be a recommendation on sanction. Now, sanction at a first offence and could be a fine. The licensee could be suspended, or in extreme cases the license could be withdrawn if there are repeated violations of license conditions. But I don't think one would go in and withdraw a license at a first offence. You would, depending on the circumstances, of course, if it was extreme. But I think there would be lesser sanctions and a warning and some sort of period in which that sanction would be maintained. For example, should you be found guilty of the same or similar offence within X period of time, you know, there could be further sanction. But if it becomes clear that a licensee has no intention of adhering to its license conditions, then of course a license, ICASA has the power to withdraw a license, and it would be incumbent upon the regulator to withdraw that license.
Thank you very much. I think that is all, members. Mr. Pitzer, thank you very much for your responses. As you know, we'll report back, and then from the 6 states, we need 2 to fill the vacancies, and whoever is successful will be informed as soon as we run through the processes. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the honourable members. Thank you.
The next candidate, members, we'll take now Mr. Advocate Stephen Kakana. It's just that the Akingisha lapang information. Stephen Kekane.